The conference is now being recorded.
Johan Eberhard is here, John Hannigan. John, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Always good. Scott, Adriana. Anyone I miss? Michael?
Yeah, Ed. Kathy yep. Mitchell's on the phone. Kathy Mitchell?
Got it.
NoFast? Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I know where you're from.
I didn't know if you heard me.
Hi, Ed.
Tom, did you get my email about that afternoon of the...
I did. We're not going to have a board meeting, but... you know, depending on your schedule, Kathy and I'd love to maybe take you to lunch if you know after the briefing.
All right. Well, they have me set up after the briefing, but maybe I'll drop by your place on Tuesday.
Yeah, that would be great.
You're going to be around.
Yes.
I have a meeting in Rockville on Wednesday and Thursday, so I'm not going to fly home. I'm just staying there. So I have a day to go visit the museum.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah, Tuesday would be great.
This is Jennifer. I'm on too.
Hello, this is Dan.
Dan is there, and someone else said something.
Hello, Elizabeth. This is Deepak Sarkar.
Hi, Deepak Sarkar.
Sarah's here.
Sarah's here.
Did you hear me, Ed? I'm here, Elizabeth.
All right, so I'll just go quickly through the who I don't have because it's a lot shorter. Michael Charnas, Jennifer Thomas.
I'm here, Ed.
Hi, Jennifer Thomas. Ben Jones. Jeff Bowes. Dale Harrell, Bill Dunty.
Yeah, we just got on.
Okay, so everybody's here who's going to be here. All right, so we just recently had our meeting, so I think everybody is up to date on where we are in terms of projects. So we do have a few items of business and a WebEx, and then I would like to update people on the developmental projects, the outcome of our annual meeting, and to talk about future directions for CFAS, which we really didn't spend a tremendous amount of time at the annual meeting, or we didn't arrive at any conclusions. I want to thank John Hannigan. He sent me some minutes of the meeting today that we had. I will edit them, send them to the Science Advisory Board, and then we will get them out to people. And we will also, in the next few weeks, try to get you more specific feedback from the SAB on future projects. In terms of the SAB, we have asked Sarah Jo Nixon to join us, and she has agreed. We also asked Kathy Spong, but she was unable to do it because of her federal position. So we are trying to increase the number on the Science Advisory Board. People have ideas of individuals taking action, which I would certainly. All right, so I know that Tatiana and Jen and a number of other people, I believe Sarah was involved, and Jill, we're working on the website, the data set descriptions, and the data sharing plan, and I think they wanted to bring up a few items today. So I'm not sure if Tatiana or Jen is leading that discussion.
Jen, you tell me who's leading this.
You guys know about it. Pick one of you.
Jen, okay,
you got
so
or Tatiana.
Jen, just so this is in response to the request that we got at the meeting that we provide a little bit more than just those data dictionaries, so to provide a little bit of reference to those. And so I think what we first of all need is probably everybody in CFAS to take a look at that. And I don't know if that's something, Jennifer, that, or Jill, that you can put up on the screen. I don't know if you've got that, that's something you can put on the screen. I don't know that we have a lot of questions for everybody. I think the main thing is we just want everyone to basically take a look at it, who hasn't been involved in the writing of it, bless it, and I think we just want to get that up there so that people will understand what those data dictionaries refer to. I mean, so I don't have any particular questions for anyone unless, Jennifer, you do.
No, I think we've been just kind of going back and forth identifying where the gaps are. And I'm sorry, my mute was on. I didn't realize before. But again, it is just to make it very user-friendly for people outside the consortium to know what kind of data are available. I think we're designing it pretty well so that it's not too long at the front end, and then there are links to all the different data dictionaries. And so I think that that strategy that you just mentioned, Tatiana, is the right one. We'll send it out or put it up so people can take a look and just identify if there's anything else that's missing. It's not up there right now.
Yeah, so what's up there now is what the issue was. So you can see right now
right.
That it basically listed the data dictionaries, and but didn't give a sense of, you know, like which dictionary, so what does it mean to be neurobehavioral one? So what we've written, and I guess I didn't know if you had the text, Jill, to put up, is we've basically gone through each of the phases and allowed it will link to the relevant data dictionary, so someone will know that in phase one we were recruiting kids at these sites with this kind of general strategy. There's a reference paper listed. It indicates which data dictionaries have the variables that were collected. We don't say how many subjects have which variables. It just gets too confusing because not everything is collected on everyone. So for several places we provide this is the number that has, you know, that could have something, but they don't necessarily have all. And I think what we're just trying to do is, I don't want to belabor it. I think people have a certain amount of responsibility if they want to use the data to learn about it and to read some papers about it. But I think someone would now be able to know enough to know whether or not they want to request the data. And I think that's what we want this to accomplish. So I think I don't think there's anything left that has tracked things that need any more input. I don't think there's anything left, I don't think.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's just, like I said, just probably having everybody take a look and just to ensure that there isn't anything.
So if we could send that out after this call. So the only thing was Tina had sent a couple more things, so I don't know, Jennifer, if you can stick that in the latest version. Otherwise, I'm glad to do it.
Yep. No, I can hang on.
So what you're looking at, so here would be the front, so Jill's showing it to us. So you'd see that you could then click on phase one, phase two, phase three, and then get a little bit of a description. And then if you can slide down, I assume this is kind of the most recent version. I didn't remember that we still had tracking in it. If you could slide down.
I don't know why, but it's not sliding down. So let me try another way.
Okay, that's right. So what it would basically do, I can walk you through it, is it would give you a description of phase one. It would, oh, there it is. Oh, so this is an older version. This isn't the latest one. I can make sure you have that. Jill. So it just goes through and identifies all the sites. We have a version that doesn't have any more tracking in it. And you can see it provides like the age range of the individuals. It goes through what domains were collected. It goes through and links you then to the standard dysmorphology exam. You know, people can see the scope, and you can see all these different things that get linked. Okay? And so I don't want to belabor it for all of you, but I think it gives a good sense. And then if you go to the dysmorphology, it shows the elements of how the evaluation and criteria were set up. And then what I think is really nice, if you are able to keep going down, Jill, is the neuropsychology. So I thought Sarah did a really nice job. She lays out in each of the functional domains what was collected in phase one, two, and three. So if an individual really wants to understand what would be collected and which set of data they'd want, I think this table lays it out really nicely for them. And so I thought that was very helpful. And then I'm trying to remember, the very last piece is then how alcohol exposure is done. And so just explains, you know, how we collected that information. And again, distinguishes between the prospective and retrospective. So I can make sure that the final version of this that doesn't have any tracking and is all cleaned up is the one that we distribute. But I think we're pretty close, and we could get this out for people's review. So again, I don't think this is the last version. I see, Sarah, you got a comment. This is not the last version, to my knowledge.
Okay. So hopefully we can finish, get it on, and then I'll have some questions for Bill, but I'll wait till his WebEx to ask those. And
okay.
Then Dale and Bill about how we should, I don't want to inform people until this is really available.
And, oh, I totally agree.
And absolutely that the informatics core can provide people with what they need. And otherwise, I think we'll just look silly. So, and how do we, what, I mean, you've done with this with other consortium, is the best way to get that information out, that the data are available? I mean, do you
wouldn't RSA, like an announcement, like, for example, through RSA, you know how they got that, the they send out messages? I think that would be a great way, wouldn't it? And also for NIAAA to promote it as well, so they could put something on their website, I would think, and maybe
we'll
put out if it's a relevant announcement.
So, but I mean, we should have a kind of a rollout about it so people know it's there. So,
right, and the FASD study group, of course.
Yeah. All right. So,
I guess one thing though, and before Tatiana, is that not all phases will be available immediately. So that needs to be clear. Clarified. Okay. Sorry.
That, and that is stated in there in the final version.
Okay.
Okay. I'm just cleaning it up right now, Jennifer. So if I can, I'll finish it up right now.
Okay.
Well, let me ask a question then. If data from phase two or three, for example, is not going to be available, do we even want to tell them about phase two or three?
I think you want people to know the instruments we've used. Don't you think they want to know that? Don't you want, if people are designing other studies, to know what we've done? I thought that would be helpful.
I think it's useful. I'm just wondering if you're going to get requests for phase three data from people, and then you're going to say it's not available yet.
Well, it says on the very first page that each phase is described below, and data are currently available for phase one. I mean, it's in the first paragraph. That'll be at the very front of this. We could put it in bold.
No, we're good then. Yeah, I think we'll put it in bold, though.
Okay, I'll do that right now.
I know people are going to be saying, oh, I want this phase three data. Could you please make it available? I need it for my dissertation, yada, yada, yada. You know, they'll beg and everything else. So, but we just fix our guns. All right, I'm going to, are there any other questions about this?
I have a question. This is Helen Yazaret.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yesterday we updated majority of the links on the data sharing page, added several data sets there, and I do not see them on the page right now. So probably my question is to Jennifer Thomas if she actually got the file that I provided.
Are those what you sent yesterday?
Yes, those are all the corrections to that page.
I'll have to take a closer look. I was traveling yesterday, so I'll take a look at that. I haven't looked at it closely yet.
Yeah, thank you very much, because all the links that are currently on the page are outdated, and several data sets are missing from there.
Okay.
Well, that'll have to be taken care of. All righty. Then I'd like to turn it over to Bill for the WebEx, and then come and go on to the new direction developmental project.
Okay. So I quit sharing my screen. Oh, there I am. Can you guys see the presentation now?
Yeah.
So what I'm going to talk about is what we've done in the last, mostly what we've done in the last 13 days since you already had an annual update from us 14 days ago. So, and there are really three areas that we've been focusing on. First and foremost, we heard very clearly from the feedback that we needed to start working on cross-query. So we've been making that a top priority for us, and very much appreciate what Leah and Sarah and Ben and everyone has been, you know, jumping in to help us with that. Second thing is what you just talked about, the updated data dictionaries input tools. And the third is just a couple things. One quick question about the data access committee. I got a question from Bill, and I wanted to run that by the group. So if you look at this next screen, the stuff on the left is the data upload part, where Helen has been developing some of those new tools. The ultrasound on the screen are new things that we've been developing. In the center, the queries and particularly the cross-query redesign has been an area of focus for the past 13 days for us. And this shows you kind of high level of what we've been working on in terms of finalizing requirements and creating a project plan to fix that cross-query. And then also the neurobehavior query, which is that new neurobehavior query is done, I believe. Correct, Helen?
Yes, that's correct.
Right. And then on the right, you'll see that there are downloads that are the CFAS.org data sharing we're getting those updated and working with Jennifer. Those are the links we just discussed. We added preschool neurobehavior. We added eating habits. That was a request from Tina. And then we're getting those all connected back to where we manage the data and the files at the UX site at IU. So first thing, cross-query plan. So there's basically three pages to the cross-query. The first page, and you specify things on the first two pages. The third page is where you get the results. So here's the plan that we have for that right now. I redesigned the original cross-query to provide the following data sets, and those are all the data sets that we intend to provide access to. You can kind of read through them. In addition, a user will be able to search by global ID, site ID, and then we will divide those up also by phases as well, and this will help us when we want to make data available to external researchers as well. Because we'll be able to limit their access to only, for example, phase one data. And then on the stage two page, in other words, where you specify things additionally, usually able to specify the value and the range for individual fields to limit the output. So range is not working, and that's one of the things that we're working on right now is to get that fixed, and Jeff Wozniak has been helping us with that as well. So the test cases, and this is something where, to your point about we want to make data available to external researchers, so we want to make sure that we understand those use cases so that when we do make announcements to the fetal alcohol spectrum research community, that we have kind of run through this a few times and we're going to be able to provide them in a relatively painless fashion. So you can see what we have for kind of the stage one test cases, search by global ID, search by site ID and phase, search by one phase. Again, we'll be limiting that for external researchers. Search by several phases, they won't be able to do that. Has data in all tables checked? In other words, produces data in which every data set is filled out. This won't return anything if the data set is empty. So that's actually one thing we wanted for the test case. Stage two, that second page of the query, filter by value of one or two fields. And then we want to filter by range, which, as I mentioned in the last slide, we're working on getting that functional. So the tasks that define our future efforts in terms of filling this out will be to identify expected query outcome record sets for the test without phase fields, such as just morphology, brain imaging. And then we're also going to reevaluate the original cross-query functionality. So the risks that need to be mitigated are if the query outcome for just morphology cannot be definitively pinpointed, since we do not have clear phase specification on these types of data sets, to help provide examples of the current constraints, et cetera, views implemented on neurobehavior base. So that's the risk of it. So if you go back to A, Ben is going to look at identifying the query outcome record set, and then if the query outcome record set for this morphology cannot be definitively pinpointed, and we're going to have to figure out how to redo that. Again, if you go back to B, we're going to reevaluate the cross-query functionality. If that cross-query functionality, in other words, if the cross-query tool just can't do what we need it to do, we're going to have to reassess the current plans for that. But right now, we think we can get that working. For data, and you were talking about data dictionaries. Here are the data dictionaries that Helen has either added or updated. that will be posted up, that are already on the UIT site, and they'll be posted up soon on the CCAS site. And then same thing, input tools, the ones that have been updated and will soon or added and will soon be added to the CFAS site. They're already on the UIT site. So question, this question came up from Sarah's group. There has been a request that the date in the Central Repository be changed to report only the year instead of the day, in other words, the year, month, day, for date of birth and administrative date. So this would obfuscate identification of our external researchers, so that would make our patients less identifiable in terms of protecting their EPHI, but it would reduce the data accuracy because, for example, if you're looking at, you know, 18-month versus 12-month-old children, you know, to have them year by year doesn't necessarily provide, may not provide the accuracy that you want. So the question to the group is this something that we want to do, or do we want to engage in another technique or look down other downstream techniques for obfuscating this data, or do we want to make sure that we just have stronger controls around for these outside investigators that want to work with protected health information? I don't know the answer to that question, but I kind of put it to the group.
Okay, this is Sarah. Can I add a little something? I think, I don't know about administrative dates.
Okay.
In terms of whether they are identifiable or not, mm-hmm. that language is confusing to me. But date of birth, I think it's pretty clear that we can't include date of birth. We cannot. But we do have age and precise age as a decimal of year and decimal month in all the neurobehavior. We have it in dysmorphology. I would think we would have it. I haven't checked, but I'm assuming it's in the other databases as well. Or it could be converted from administration date and date of birth could be calculated a precise age. But I really don't, I mean, Tatiana, am I wrong about, I mean, we really should not have date of birth in our database.
That would be
I agree
with
Sarah.
We can't.
But if you have exact age, this is Tina, if you have exact age and you have the date of administration of the test, you basically have date of birth.
Right.
Yeah.
So I guess, that's a good point, Tina. I hadn't made that connection. So then the other part of that, Bill, that I also don't know the answer to is we have to have date of birth. Like when we enter our data, locally, we need to include date of birth because it allows us to calculate age, which we need to compute our normative data from our, you know, convert from normative data. So we have to have it at that point. My understanding is that that date of birth gets uploaded to the central repository. And then right now it is visible in the central repository. So I think I have two questions. One is, do we need to not make it visible, but also do we need to not make it present? Now, I don't know the answer to that.
Is the issue that, this is Tina again, when people would be accessing this under a data use agreement from the outside, they would actually be querying using the query tool and be looking at the data as it exists in the mm-hmm. database rather
well,
than
I think it,
requesting
it also,
something in a data set would be prepared for them and sent to them?
I think that's an interesting question also, but I think it even needs to be for us, for our internal use. I mean, should the date of birth be present and visible to anybody at all?
Well, as long as, I mean, I think we have the protections in place and the human subjects approval to collect personally identified information, which we are,
yes.
which we have to have, like you say, and we're, and the, under the confines of what we're doing, that's acceptable. It's when you archive the data or when you supply it to somebody else that you want to remove, strip it of personal identifiers.
Okay, but when you say supply it to somebody else, does that mean anybody or does that mean somebody outside of the consortium?
to me, it means somebody outside of the consortium. But maybe I'm thinking.
I don't know the answer.
I agree that I mean the PI have to take ultimate responsibility. So if you know Elizabeth is using Sarah's database, but she's having one of her people analyze it, that person should have access to the date of birth.
Right.
Same way Elizabeth would.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right. Yes, but do we need date of birth? I mean, date of birth doesn't really serve a purpose.
Well, then people wouldn't query for it.
But it comes up as part of the subject identifying. It comes up as, at least in neurobehavior and I believe this morphology, when you query, you get it. You just get it.
I mean, the date of birth is being an identifier. If you have 70 people, you have 100% probability almost that two of them will have the same birthday.
You know, yeah, I agree with you, Ed. I agree with you, Ed, and that's how I feel about administration date. But the fact is that it's been listed as a identifying.
It is a HIPAA identifier.
I mean, that's the problem. You definitely can't give that out. You got to have another way when it's anyone external to the consortium. I don't think they can have access to that.
Yeah, and that's why I'm saying either restrict access so they can only see age and not date of birth, or when data use agreements are implemented, the consortium provides a data set that's stripped of identifiers and the outside user doesn't have direct access to the repository.
So we could give them the age.
Well, maybe we can give them the age. Maybe this isn't something that we need to take up.
Right. Okay.
Time on
yeah.
This particular call, but I'm happy to Bill and I and maybe Tatiana and Tina can get together and figure out what the rules are and what needs to be done.
So I just have the sense of the group that we don't want to provide identifiers, or that we have to. If so, we have to come up with more strict controls in terms of administrative controls or IRB controls. For that, then we can kind of come up with here are the options. I just want to get a sense of the group because we didn't want to start. We're happy to do whatever, right? We don't care. But we just want to make sure that we have kind of clear guidance from the project in terms of what we want, and we've kind of all thought through it. That's really the only reason I brought it up here.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have a question on a timeline of doing these things. How long are we talking about before you think you have a workable cross-query tool?
That's something that I'm going to have to ask Helen to maybe address that.
I would like to say that we would need to finalize our decision if we decide to modify the current cross-query tool, and so far it looks like it's possible. So, I think by the end of this week, we probably will arrive at this decision.
Right.
And even right now, it works. It doesn't work as completely because it does not have all the data sets available first, and then not all the phases are there. So this can be easily corrected. As Bill provided a description that some of the features, like, for example, the ranges, do not work, at least, based on my initial investigation. However, values are working. So cross-query currently is working partially.
Right. The question, the reason I'm asking is that if we're going to bring this out to the public,
mm-hmm.
but to other investigators.
Yes. I would like to point out that it's not the query tool that we're working right now will be brought to the public, because this query tool is much more kind of advanced and much wider than we would provide to the public. Public will only see phase one data, and not all the data sets will be available for the phase one data.
Right.
Some of the data sets were added quite late, some in phase two and in phase three. So it's going to be kind of limited.
So I think Ed's question is, when do we think that we'll have, a working version of CrossQuery tool for CFAS investigators done, and when would we be able to tell people that this external, you know, query of phase one data for external researchers would, we think that'll be ready. So I think he's kind of looking for dates on when we can think about advertising these services to the broader community.
That's certainly one of the issues. The other one is that in thinking of a renewal of CFAS, it's going to be important that we show the integration of the various projects. And the best way to do that is by using data from each of the independent UL1s. And if we can't get the data to do it, I mean, we have a two-year timeline. So basically, you have to put in publications within the next year using multiple data sets in order to get them in press by the time you send off a renewal. And I think that that's going to be critical in the evaluation of the renewal, is how integrated are we and how useful have we shown the fact that we collect data in multiple domains and we can put those together. So those types of publications in the next year are going to be critical for the success of the future CFAS.
And I think that holds also, you know, for anybody that we can attract to use the data from outside of CFAS. It shows effective data sharing.
So if it's going to take a year to do it, then we need to refigure something out, because it won't help us in moving CFAS forward to the next phase. If it's going to take a month, then that's great. And I have no idea where we are. I know we've been working on this cross-query question for at least a year. So I'm just trying to get an idea. And you know, like I said, it's a matter of, is there better software available that comes out of a can and works better? Or works, that's the way to go? Or do we, you know, program, or do you guys program it yourselves? I don't know. But I'm just trying to get a vague idea of how long before people think it's reasonable.
As an aside, and I talked with Sarah and Tatiana about this, it seems to me, this is Tina, that before this becomes a public, any portion of this, phase one or otherwise, becomes a public use data set, that the deferred category for the diagnosis needs to be redefined so that it's clear what these people are. And
I think that's a good point, Tina.
Yeah, Tina, I have a table, a working table that I've been working on since we talked about it, and I'll get in touch with you about it.
Right. So I think your question is an important one, Ed, and it's probably the most important one that we're trying to wrap our arms around right now. I feel a little bad for Helen because she's been kind of thrown into this recently, and I know she's working really hard and putting a lot of great effort into it. I think she said by this Friday she should have a better idea of what the timeline would be, and I'd like to maybe give her till Friday.
Yeah, that's fine. But I think we have to come up with a reasonable timeline or figure out some alternative that at least so that people can do these cross-project analysis. Which are going to be critical. I think I tried to show that in my talk at the annual meeting that we had. You know, we need more of those CFAS publications. That really rings true to reviewers. I've reviewed consortium, and that's always one of the big issues that comes up. And I think it's going to become more critical the way Dr. Kube is talking, that to have to show something more than the individual products if you want to expect your project to be included in a consortium. The best way to do that is, you know, CFAS. So I just bring it up as I think it's an issue that we need to seriously consider to see how we're going to move forward, because we only have a year to get those papers, because you can't even put papers submitted anymore. They have to be impressed.
Okay. Understood, and that's why we're making this a top priority for us to resolve,
And your timely question is a reasonable one, and we'll get a timeline as soon as we can.
And Helen has been great, so, and I know she's gotten thrown into this, so I appreciate her efforts on it, and I know she's working hard. So, all right.
Thank you very much. May I just add some thoughts, you know, to that. I would like to point out that currently on the neurobehavioral query page, we provided multiple data sets to query data sets in relation to the neurobehavior complete battery. So in addition to the neuro data set, we added demographics, brain imaging, dysmorphology, and 3D facial imaging. And on the other part, so if you would like to create complete data set in regards to neurobehavioral data, well, you will be able to do it on the neuro page. And from the other perspective, alcohol and control query page provides complete battery for alcohol and control. And we have additional query page for infant and preschool neurobehavior. So we have kind of partial queries there, so it's possible to consolidate them. Of course, we would like to have all these queries in one page, and it's going to be the query, cross-query page that will consist of all the data sets available.
Yeah.
Okay? I'm sorry.
No, I was going to end this, the WebEx, and move on to, because I want to talk about some of the future directions and get some ideas.
I just have one more slide.
Sure, I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem. So, and here's the question that Bill Dunkey asked about the Data Access Committee, and basically his question is, should the institutional authority be the responsible for proposals, which means that they are the ones really signing the proposals, and they are also the ones who are on the line in terms of the policy, and they are also the ones online in terms of filling out the form and in terms of signing the data access agreement. It's a really minor change in terms of work effort. It's just a matter of I just want to make sure that we raise this issue with the group. I think it makes sense, considering that you have to have institutional authorities take responsibility when you submit grant proposals, so this is really no different. But I just wanted to kind of get a quick yes/no from the group, and then we'll get those changes made.
I think it's a good idea because it also guarantees that they'll have institutional approval to do the project.
Right.
So we don't buy or be so. So I think that's good.
Yeah, if there's general agreement, we'll go ahead and make those changes.
Any negative comments on that?
I agree, too.
All right. So that's good. All righty.
All right. Thanks, I'm done.
Thanks. All right, so we didn't spend as much time as I had hoped in the meeting talking about future directions, and it's the Science Advisory Board, NIAAA, and I, and Mike Charnas had a conversation yesterday trying to decide on these developmental projects. And it was difficult, it's been difficult to try to narrow this down because we have some very good scientific projects and we worry about the fit with CFAS. And the fit question raises the thing of, well, where's CFAS going? Are these developmental projects looking forward to the next phase of CFAS, that they might convert into UO1s, so if we have projects in nutrition, and we have projects in non-invasive imaging type of techniques, where is CFAS going so we could choose between which of these equally meritorious developmental projects we want to put our funds into? And one of the issues that's up as perhaps a priority for future phases of CFAS is in trying to move the diagnostic abilities down to younger ages. And I would like to get people's sentiments about that to see if people think that should be a priority. And if it should be a priority, what are the things that we need to do now to make sure that CFAS in its next iteration can manage doing that? For example, do we need to recruit more younger subjects? How many younger subjects do we see right now? Is that enough to do the types of projects people would want done with younger subjects? So I'd just like to get people's ideas about, and let's talk about it as the younger, try to move the diagnostic capability down to younger ages. Is that a priority? And if so, what do we need to do to try to make that happen? I mean, how many people have subjects younger than age 3 right now, and how many people get referred younger than age 3 prior in the projects that are ongoing? And I know Jeff's
isn't
not on.
Tina, yeah, isn't Tina the only one who has kids under the age of 3? Who else does?
Jeff Woods.
Well, this Jeff and this.
Go ahead, Gina.
Jeff does, and I presume that they're accessible to Claire and Julie. They're just not part of the project right now.
Oh, yeah, and same with me. I mean,
oh,
we haven't.
I thought you meant in the project.
What?
I thought Ed was asking in the project. You just mean access to bring into the project in the future.
Well, Tina, for example, Kent has this morphology clinic. And I'm sure he sees children of all ages.
Sure.
But
yeah,
many,
he's seeing about 25 a month now, and they are many of them are newborns, and there are plenty of kids that are under the age of 3.
But are they alcohol exposed?
Yeah, that's why they're coming in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and in L.A., there's even at USC, there's a clinic where we could maybe tap into. We just have never tried to recruit younger than 5.
Okay, so then it seems that that's a feasible, we could recruit a reasonable number of subjects if we wanted to go down to 3.
Well, I think we should probably do a little research, contact the people where we think we could get access and see how many are there, how many are they seeing a year and what's the potential for referrals.
Okay, I think that's a critical thing if we want to talk about the younger populations and if it's a priority to do that. And I'm hearing that people think that they could recruit at their sites a reasonable number of people. That's good. And I know that I've asked Jennifer to contact Jeff Wozniak about the number that they see. And it's great that Ken's seeing 25 a month. I mean, that's pretty good. And
I mean, recruiting them, though, is one thing, and getting them to cooperate for all the things we do is quite another.
Is there any way to tap into anything with PATH? So, I mean, I'm just thinking with the cohorts they've collected, is there any data or anything that you can use from that to either, do some preliminary work or to help guide what you'd want to design?
Certainly. Now, the PATH project, in fact, in the next iteration, the alcohol data will be available. So that certainly might be a possibility. We also have a developmental project that is from South Africa that has a large population available. So there are things that we need to consider. I mean, that's one of the reasons I brought this up is because we're trying to decide among these developmental projects who have equal scientific merit which projects to bring in as we move forward into the next iteration. So,
Well, the question in my mind is with PATH is at, you know, what age? I mean, brain imaging at during infancy is easy. Brain imaging at age 3 is very difficult without sedation, which we can't do.
Yeah, I guess I was trying to tell if you wanted these kids, I'm sorry, maybe I'm missing something. If you're most interested in these kids in terms of doing additional studies, if you're trying to create a cohort that eventually could be lined up for intervention. I guess I'm trying to a little bit understand. I think we're all interested in younger kids. What's our ultimate goal and extent of research that we're interested in doing? And is it, does that make sense what I'm asking?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the question came up is that the idea is that everyone knows that the earlier you intervene, the more likely you are that that intervention is going to have an impact. And yet we can't really identify, most of the kids that we see are, you know, 5, 6 ages. And so if we could identify them earlier, then we could get them into interventions earlier. Whether or not we would be doing the interventions would be another story. But it's earlier.
I mean, I think that we need to think about, you know, we all know earlier is better, but later may not be too late. I just really want to hit that point home because the brain is still so dynamically changing. And,
right.
You know, our paper that just came out on SES, we're arguing don't give
right.
up. It's not too late. So I don't know that.
You're not arguing against the early identification. I mean,
no.
Still important.
They're not mutually exclusive goals.
They're not.
Yeah, no, and no one's saying they are. All right, I was concerned.
So can I ask a question, Ed, or make a comment? It's Sarah. I guess, and maybe this piggybacks on what was just said, I guess I would be concerned, because we also, another message that we got was that resources would be perhaps more limited than they were in phase 3. And if we take a new approach to younger, we can't really do both if our resources are going to be cut. And so would the idea be to switch our focus to a younger age, or are you thinking that we would still continue the work that we do in school-age children, but add a focus on younger children? And if that's the case, I think that would be really challenging.
I agree, Sarah. It's tough.
Well, I think that if you came up with a novel new thing to do with school-age children and above, it would fare well.
Mm-hmm.
Doing more of the same, I'm not sure that it would be as interesting as doing something new and novel. And maybe Bill and Dale can correct me on that.
It's Michael, and I just want to reinforce that comment. We talked at the meeting about, if possible, avoiding in a proposal terms like "we will continue to." And we do need to come up with something that's novel that clearly differentiates CFAS 4 from CFAS 3. So I would say that part of this exercise is to see if there is something novel and unique and impactful for the field that could come of studying younger people that would make it more valuable, certainly, but also more appealing to reviewers, because nothing is valuable if we don't get funded to do it. It doesn't mean throwing out everything that we've done, but I think we do need to change our focus and to sharpen the potential impact for reviewers by having a path that doesn't diverge completely from where we've been, but seems to take us in a new direction. And, you know, it's in that regard that we were struggling in our discussion yesterday to understand which of many very attractive developmental projects would be the best fit to CFAST in helping to generate some change for us and some movement into a new direction that, that would be appealing.
You know, I concur. I think that we have to be kind of setting the state of the art of where this thing is and answering important clinical questions at the same time. And
you know, my view is that, you know, younger may not be the only answer. I mean, I think we should also think about ways to investigate variability around the mean. So why does, you know, what's going on in the kids who do better versus worse who have the same amount of exposure? I mean, I think that's also, you know, something to think about.
Yeah, no, I think there are lots of different ideas. I'm just trying to get an idea of some of these future directions. I mean, I brought up the early diagnosis. Another one that came up and we could talk about for a few minutes was trying to do less expensive, non-invasive functional assessments. We had a couple proposals looking at FNRI, if I have that right, or new ways of looking at EEG data as ways of functionally assessing the brain that could be used as an evaluation of interventions and yet would be cost effective since it's doing functional MRI. Is that an area that, you know, people would consider state-of-the-art moving forward into new and novel areas?
From a neurobehavior perspective, I mean, I don't know if it's state-of-the-art, but I think we could, and one of the things that I've thought about is proposing a more automated evaluation, something perhaps that takes advantage of technology that could be administered across the country across the world. It's state-of-the-art in that it assesses using, you know, computers and iPads and things like that. Whether it's providing a state-of-the-art assessment, I haven't quite figured that out for myself yet.
But, Sarah, would that be something that could be done there would be a different assessment for that would be age-appropriate for younger versus older populations?
Well, I think that you would have to consider age in terms of your assessment, you know, but to be frank, assessing younger children is not just giving the same test to younger kids.
Course,
it's a completely different ball of wax and needs to be given very, very careful attention.
I agree.
And we have talked about this, is that, you know, in a future iteration, maybe we want a bioengineering core so that people who have these ideas, we don't know how to program iPads and things like that to do these. We have the ideas of what we should be asking, but we don't know how to implement it. And whether or not we need a core that might be able to take, you know, the suggestions that Michael had about the dysmorphology core and how to do that and implement those suggestions. You know, I don't know. I think that sounds like a reasonable idea. But
one comment about the EEG is, I wonder if it should be considered in conjunction with imaging, at least for a start. I mean, it seems like if you completely move away from imaging, brain imaging,
Elizabeth,
and start
a new thing. Well, I'm not trying to move away from anything. I'm just trying to. It was motivated by these developmental projects to think about these ideas. I'm not saying anything substituting for anything else. I didn't want to get paranoid about any of these suggestions.
Not paranoid, Ed. I was just saying it might be cool to do both in the same kids.
That's one of the things that when we start looking at concept development for the next iteration that people are going to have to think of. And as Michael said, if we say we're doing more of the same, you know, it's going to be problematic, I think, in review.
No, I don't. I'm not sure that anyone is really suggesting doing more of the same,
right?
I mean, not that I And we've known that every phase.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's about 11. So, Bill, Dale, Michael, and the Science Advisory Board. Any last comments or?
No, this has been this is John. This has been fruitful to get this kind of input, and I think that I'll just emphasize that something that a couple of you have already said, that it can't just be doing what we did at a different age, whether we're talking about younger. It can't just be following up the cohort that we have, which is another option, looking at the same way that we have. George, and his comments really emphasized that they're looking hard at innovation. And I think another general question that came up clearly from a couple of quarters at the meeting was, how is what we're doing having an impact on the community, you know, the professional community, the clinicians, and especially on the families? And I think that needs to be something that we're thinking about as we're making these decisions going forward.
And I think that you know, looking at factors that in the environment after birth that contribute to function or dysfunction or risk and resiliency is a way to move closer. Maybe it's not intervention per se, but trying to understand what is going on in the environment that helps or hurts, and can we intervene there? But if we don't know what it is, we can't develop an intervention.
Dale, Bill?
Nothing to add from Dale.
Okay.
You know, I would echo John's comments that it's not necessarily going to be a difficult task and review, but it's also going to be a difficult sell here at the Institute if we continue to do the same or propose to do the same thing, so.
Well, I mean, I have heard rumors of projects getting very, very good priority scores and not getting paid because of the lack of innovation, of adding really, you know, moving up the ladder and providing new knowledge. And, you know, we need to avoid that. So we really need to step up and provide new important clinical information. And I have a note from Jill that she needs a PDF copy of your NIH RPPR progress report, which is due today from everybody, and to email the current IRB IACOC approval protocol letters as they're applicable. All right. Michael, any closing comments?
No, I think I said my piece. I think we're all ready to go, and I guess we're going to meet again in a week, right?
Right.
The Scientific Advisory Board.
Science Advisory Board. I've got John's comments, and I started putting together the comments about the individual developmental projects, and we'll be working on that this weekend. All
great.
Right?
Great.
Sounds good.
Well, all right.
Thank you, one and all. I always appreciate these calls, and I appreciate everybody being here today. And thanks a lot. Have a good week.
Thanks, Ed.
Right.
Good weekend.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.